today on the front porch, skiing, the ideal sport for the disabled.
Once you're out on the hill, you ride the chairlift like anybody else, and boom, you're down the hill, skiing with gravity and in this newfound control over your disability that you would never think you would ever have.
Chris Devlin-Young is one of the best disabled skiers in the world. His many championships include gold medals in two Paralympic Games. He's teaching future champions as head coach of the New England Disabled Ski Team, and he's designing better equipment for disabled skiers. This is Out in the Cold Week on the Front Porch, and we bring you an interview from December of 2002 with this champion athlete who's doing what he can to help other disabled people reach their potential just as he did. I'm John Walters. Join me and Chris Devlin-Young on the Front Porch on NHPR. In the world of skiing, there aren't very many people who've accomplished as much as Chris Devlin-Young. Chris has been one of the best in disabled skiing since 1985. He's the only person to win gold at the Paralympic Games in two different classes. In 1994, he won as a four-tracker, skiing upright. In 2002, he took the gold in Super G on a sit ski, racing in a seated position on a single ski. He's also competed against able-bodied athletes in the Extreme Snowboard Championships, using a snowboard he designed, built, and patented, a snowboard for disabled skiers. He also designs and builds wheelchair-accessible furniture. He's head coach of the New England Disabled Ski Team. He lives in Campton, New Hampshire, with his wife Donna and their son Brandon. Chris, welcome to the front porch.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
How fast can you go on a ski?
Well, in Aspen at an event called 24 Hours, which is a downhill race for a full day, I was clocked at 82 miles an hour.
Going up and down the hill for 24 hours?
Going up and down the hill. It's 14 minutes up in the gondola and about 2.5 minutes down.
Over and over again.
As many times as you can get in. I think it's 36 or 37 runs approximately that these guys are able to get in. So far, I've been just a forerunner and still trying to get myself into the event. They're still not ready.
How does your speed compare with an able-bodied skier?
Well, I compare my speeds with racers, because that's mostly my field is mostly racing out on the hill against the general public. I'm probably one of the fastest skiers out on the hill. Against the racers, I'm about 6, maybe 7 seconds slower than the racers without a disability.
6 or 7 seconds out of how long a run?
Well, most runs generally run about a minute and 35, a minute to 50 seconds long, which is about the length of maybe a mile and a quarter, approximately, something around there.
What's the biggest thrill you've had on the slopes?
The biggest thrill out on the slopes has probably been the first day that I learned how to ski, and it gave me back the speed in my life. And from there, it's just been a snowball effect, and pretty much all my life has been downhill, but just helping other people experience that same experience that I've experienced.
Were you a skier before you became disabled?
I never skied before I got hurt. Mm-hmm. I went to one ski area once when I was a kid and threw a few snowballs and it got cold and we turned around and left right away. But I grew up on the beach in California, so I had no idea where my life was going when the therapist, while at the VA hospital in California, rolled by in his wheelchair and asked me, "Hey, you want to go skiing?" And I thought, "Skiing? What the heck is that?" So from there, we went up to a little ski area in California, and I learned my first lessons up there and was hooked immediately.
You were disabled in 1982. Could you tell us how that happened?
We were on a mission in the Coast Guard up in Alaska, out flying from Shimia. It's an Air Force base, to Attu, which is the last island of the Aleutian chain, pretty much about the same distance from Seattle to Miami as from Anchorage, Alaska, out to Shimia. And then out to Attu. But Shimia is a 50-foot tall island, flat all the way across, and Attu has 5,000-foot mountains. We left flying in the fog and weren't expecting to find anything but a runway and found a mountain instead. So we out of 11, we lost two, and one guy broke his neck, actually. I broke my back, and the rest walked away. So all in all, it's quite a day.
I've heard that you tried to save others who were on the plane in the plane crash, and that if you hadn't, you might be able to walk today.
Well, that's a good debate. That one goes through my mind continuously. I have a partial paralysis, so I'm completely paralyzed from my feet, my toes to my knees, and partially paralyzed from my hips to my knees. And it allows me with crutches and braces to stand up and walk at times, and it used to allow me to stand up and ski until the rigors of snow skiing just tore up my knees so much that it became necessary to sit down and ski. But had I not, because of the incomplete injury, moved around, and had we been so aware like we are today about spinal cord injuries of immobilizing people, I would have probably not tried to go around and help out my buddies that seemed worse off than I did. And it was just natural. We were in an emergency situation, and that's what we did. We were trained to help people in an emergency, and nobody ever needed our help in good weather. So we were always going in bad weather. We didn't even think twice about the day. So, no, I wouldn't change anything because it got me to where I am. And it's not always fun being where I am with a disability, but I live a very good life now.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with Chris Devlin Young, champion Paralympic skier and resident of Campton, New Hampshire. Do you remember when they first told you were disabled?
Actually, no, I don't. I don't remember the exact time that it was that somebody came in and said, "You are paralyzed, you will never walk again." It was probably years that I finally put it all together and realized, oh, this is what it means. Even though I was pushing around in a wheelchair, dealing with life on a daily basis, and using crutches and braces at times, I'd strived to not appear disabled. So, did things which, in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have done, but did things to make myself appear less disabled to the general public, and I think mostly to myself. But now it's taken a while, but I realize, you know, that the disability is one step in life, and for me it's been a pretty big step. But skiing is really the perfect sport for a person with a disability. And had I been in the hospital and inside of those first 6 months or so after rehab, somebody introduced me to skiing instead of finding it years and years later, that transition period would have been a lot easier, because the skiing really gives back the freedom in my life. And it's a cliche that everybody uses, but it really is. Klaus Obermeier, one of my sponsors, Obermeier Skiwear, has a great quote. He says that skiing is like taking you to the top of a mountain and handing you wings and saying, "Here, fly." And it really is. For a person with a physical disability, pushing around, just getting from the car to the slopes through the snow, and then you track up all the salt that we use out here in New England to keep the roads and everything from freezing. Boy, I'd rather it froze. But, the life just is so slow and cumbersome just to get from point A to point B, that once you're out on the hill, you ride the chairlift like anybody else, and boom, you're down the hill skiing with gravity and in this control over your disability that you would never think you would ever have.
I think those of us who haven't experienced it would think that skiing would be an especially dangerous thing for a disabled person to do. And you're saying the opposite.
Well, skiing is kind of a dangerous sport. It's dangerous in the aspect that it's dangerous to the level you want to take it to. It's all up to the individual. If they want to take it to a safe, easy, comfortable, say, green slope, beginner slope level, and that's where they want to go. And we have some skiers like that up at Loon that would like that, and the White Mountain Adaptive Snow Sport School up there that helps us out. They have a lot of students that hopefully they will be funneling through us into the team atmosphere, into racing-like techniques atmosphere. Some people never want to go fast. And then we have some risk takers, that's for sure. A young boy by the name of Tyler Walker lives up in Franconia. He was born with no legs, and he probably takes the most risks of anybody, including myself. I'm starting to get a little older and starting to realize, okay, we can take calculated risks now. We just don't have to go get as much big air as we want. But out at a race in Utah, he, right before a race run, saw the snowboard park, which happened to be very close to the race hill, and went off a big snowboard jump and completely destroyed his monoski, the sit-ski device he uses, and took him out of the race, out of the day, out of the competition until we could find a welder to weld it back together again. But it was a risk. He didn't get hurt, but it was definitely a risk that he was taking. And like events like 24 Hours of Aspen, like the Jeep King of the Mountain Series that I've been a forerunner in the past, and it's a downhill environment, you take those risks and you take those those chances to the level you want to take. And that's one of the nice parts about skiing, is it's not nobody's out there pushing you to do anything that you might find unsafe, because you can always stop.
How did you get into competitive skiing?
Well, it happened during that same week that I learned how to ski. When I got off the lift, two turns, and I knew that was it. I had my life back. I knew that it didn't matter so much. It still mattered, but it didn't matter so much that I couldn't walk anymore. And it mattered that, and my favorite quote is, I got the wind in my hair back again. But at the end of that week was a regional competition in a race series that's been happening around the U.S. for disabled racers for quite some time. And it was a level two race. So it was a race for more advanced, not introductory level racers. And it's something that now I race at on a World Cup level, which would be akin to something like a level three race. There was a gap. I went right into level two racing, and I was hooked immediately. And I moved from my home to a ski area that had coaching and immediately started racing. And I've devoted the last 17 years of my life to racing, and then all the other pursuits that have come from that. They didn't have a level one series, an introductory series, and that's something that we're starting here in New England now with the help of some of the other ski programs around New England that have adaptive ski schools. We started the Golden Cup series, and it's named for Diana Golden, who was probably, at least in my opinion, the greatest disabled skier to ever live.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with Chris Devlin-Young, competitive Paralympic skier and resident of Campton, New Hampshire. A few years ago, you did something that nobody's ever done before, or I think since, and that is you competed against able-bodied skiers in the extreme snowboarding competition. First of all, I guess for those who aren't familiar with it, could you explain what extreme snowboarding is?
Well, turn around and look at the wall and imagine skiing down the wall. But now imagine skiing down the wall on a snowboard, which isn't as quick as from edge to edge as alpine skis. So pretty much you have to stick it in the fall line and wait for it to come around, which makes your turn radius a little longer than normal. But it's jumping off of cliffs. It's skiing head walls, and they call them mandatory air lines. A line is something you choose from top to bottom. That's my line where I'm going to go. And there are places out on the hill that are mandatory air. There's no way down unless you jump, or you can hike back up, which in a sit ski is not an option. So
so why did you want to do this?
Well, after developing, and we were living in Crested Butte at the time, Don and I, and we put together this think tank of other athletes and a couple of snowboard technicians and such to try to develop a snowboard rig. And the idea actually came from Donna was working on a project with a snowboard event called a Border Cross, and she introduced me to a couple people that had a snowboard, and so we bolted a binding right to it and took it out for a couple of runs, and it just tore it to pieces in a couple of turns. But in those turns, I thought, oh, okay, this sounds like a lot of fun. During that same time period, I had been meeting a lot of snowboarders through different events and such that came up to me and said, dude, like most snowboarders say, have you tried to snowboard underneath that thing? Or I've got a friend who used to be a snowboarder, now he's in a wheelchair. Have you tried a snowboard? He'd like to get out again. And after about a thousand of those saying that, it finally dawned on me, maybe I ought to give this snowboard thing a try. We put together this rig that we now call the Trench Digger 5000, and it's an adapter plate, so this allows you to go straight from your monoski to a snowboard and then get out on the hill. And I needed a place to prove, so when I passed out my brochures at events and did my marketing for selling this plate, I could say this thing is bulletproof, and this is why it's bulletproof. We've taken it out, and we've jumped off the cliffs, and it didn't break.
So when you signed up for this competition, I guess you kind of snuck in.
Well, I try to fly under the radar as much as possible, and I had known the judges from previous events there at Crested Butte, so I had talked to them a little bit about it before, but really try to get in there and try to be treated and appear as any other athlete that came there to compete, and didn't get any consideration from the judges as to scoring considerations, and really didn't, at the time, didn't really want them. Found out that maybe in the future there might need to be some, but that's to be worked out in the future. But I wanted to get in there and make a splash, wanted to get in there and prove it could be done, wanted to get in there and have a good time, wanted to get in there and open people's eyes in a sport, in a venue like this, in the most extreme of venues, that people with disabilities can ski and aren't necessarily fragile.
When you showed up there, and they weren't expecting a disabled snowboarder to show up and compete in this event for everybody, did they try to stop you?
Well, at the top, there are a few ski patrollers, and then the starter, and then a bunch of other snowboarders up at the top. And nobody at the top knew I was coming. So they kind of looked at me sideways, and I had my bib on, and I got in line with all the other competitors, and it kind of looked at me. One of the ski patrollers walks over, taps me on the shoulder, and says, "You know where you're going?" I said, "Oh, yeah, no problem." So I just went, and they're okay, go ahead. Racer ready, go.
Have you ever been hurt on the slopes?
I've been hurt quite a bit on the slopes, actually. Let me see. I got hurt in 1994, the first time at the Olympics at the Paralympics in Norway in Lillehammer, and was just warming up on the first day of skiing. We had flown over. We were all warming up before downhill training, and was out free skiing and came to a stop at the bottom of the hill, hit some chunky icy snow, and my ski clicked off. And because I couldn't feel necessarily, it had actually done permanent damage to my knees. Mm-hmm. Broken the top of the tibia, torn the cartilage, and torn the ligaments permanently because of not having the full muscles and the partial paralysis. I wasn't able to rehab my knees.
And that was when you were standing and
that
skiing.
That was when I was standing and skiing, and then I continued to race that event at the Olympics and won the slalom on the last day. So something to be said for not being able to feel my joints, but unfortunately now I use a wheelchair almost full-time, and then I only am able to sit down and ski, which actually is better sit skiing because now my legs don't get tired all day, so it's a whole lot more fun. And then let me see, I've broken a scapula in 1996 at the World Championships, my first World Championships as a sit skier, coming back now after 94, I had to retire off the U.S. team and then make a comeback, teach myself how to monoski the sit ski device, and then came back to the U.S. team, made the U.S. team again inside of a year, started competing on the World Cup circuit again, and found out in 96 that my mind can ski faster than the equipment. And I wanted to ski faster than the equipment could go. And that's kind of been a recurring theme for me of skiing too fast. And last year I actually, to the point of the last injury was a broken collarbone a couple of years ago at the U.S. Nationals in another downhill. But skiing a little too fast, and that one was for the conditions, not necessarily the monoski. But I have a hard time feathering the throttle. It's pretty much all the way down or it's all the way off. But last year I actually learned how to feather the throttle a bit and become a lot more consistent. And it really proved in my results from last season, having won, I think, all but maybe three or four of the races that I entered last year. So I did quite well.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with Chris Devlin Young. I'm John Walters on the front porch on NHPR. Still to come, Chris talks about his first foray into extreme snowboarding on a homemade board, the many adaptive ski programs in the area, and his plans to bring home the gold in the 2006 Paralympic Games. And tomorrow on the front porch, Out in the Cold Week continues with Bert Yankla, an electrical engineer who's helping build an overland route to the South Pole.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Support for The Front Porch comes from our contributing listeners and from Franklin Pierce College, now offering the Action MBA in New Business Development at the Chanel Drive campus in Concord. Information at 229-4580. And LaValle and Middleton Building Supply, the project headquarters for building and remodeling. Quality homes, garages, kitchens, baths, and flooring online at lavalleys.com. Stay with us for more on The Front Porch. And at 7 o'clock, it's Fresh Air.
I'm John Walters, and this is Out in the Cold Week on the Front Porch, shows about cold places, people, and activities. Today it's an interview from December of 2002 with Chris Devlin Young, one of the best disabled skiers in the world and winner of multiple gold medals in the Paralympic Games. You lived most of your life out west. When did you move to New Hampshire?
Well, when my wife and I met at a fundraiser for the U.S. ski team in Vail, Colorado, we met there where she was working with a different athlete, the other Chris, not this one, but a different one. We met there and then started working together. She was a sports manager. When we got together and she started working for me, and then things became very romantic. Well, I wanted to be romantic right away, and I don't know if she knew right away or not, but when we got married, it became time for us to consolidate a bit. And she had an apartment in New York, one in Toronto, and a house in New Hampshire, and I had a house in Colorado and some land in Montana. We needed to pare down a bit. So for her job and production, it was better to move east, and all I really needed was skiing. And we've got so many skiers outside the house within an hour of the house that it's crazy not to have moved out here. But there are no sidewalks here, which is kind of disturbing.
I was kind of thinking about a mud season in a wheelchair.
It's muddy, real muddy. I've got a friend up in Montana. He actually keeps two wheelchairs. And inside the front door of his house, he built one of those environmentally friendly houses, tire house and hay bale house up in Montana. He has an indoor shower, so he just rolls into the house, washes the chair off with the shower right away, and then actually transfers to another chair in an attempt to try to keep the mud season down. I do the same thing, keep two chairs, leave the muddy chair outside, and then use crutches and braces to get inside.
Now, your move to New Hampshire has kind of brought disabled skiing, competitive disabled skiing to New Hampshire. I mean, you're the coach of the New England disabled ski team, which didn't exist before. So what kind of things are you doing here?
Well, with the advent of the race team, it has spurred on a couple of other areas. Waterville Valley up here in New Hampshire and then Sunday River over in Maine have now started racing programs. Just the Waterville Valley ski team and then the Sunday River ski team, through seeing some of the results that we've had and some of the successes we've had, started a advanced, if not just straight racing program. At Loon, we're maybe a little bit different that we cater to the advanced skiers. It's really raised the bar here in New England, and it's got with this new Golden Cup series, it's starting to galvanize and bring together all these small ski programs, and almost every area here in New England has an adaptive ski school.
In working with young people and teaching them to ski, either just to ski or to ski competitively, have you met other Chris Devlin Youngs, other people who are having trouble adjusting to their disabilities?
I actually don't meet enough. I wish I had a chance to meet more. When I was first lying in bed, a guy that gets around, and I, for the life of me, I can never remember his name, but I have to have my own name tattooed on the inside of my eyelids to remember it. But people with disabilities are pretty shy in the beginning, and I was in the beginning. And when one of these young, mobile, and my counterpart now, the kinds of things I try to do, came to my bedside and said, "Hey, you know, life's not that bad. Look, you know, you're going to be able to do this, and you're going to be able to play basketball, and you can play tennis, and, you know, you'll get a van and get around and you know, get close parking at the malls, and, you know, it's not too bad, you know, and chicks dig dancing on wheelchairs, so that's pretty fun." But uh, we uh, at the time I ushered him out, he lasted about maybe 3.5 minutes before, you know, I don't know if I was screaming and yelling at him, but it wasn't a happy, you know, scene for him. But, you know, I'd like to have a chance to see more. I don't get a chance to see him most of the new injuries until they've started skiing. I've been just so focused with skiing, and it's really taken up a lot of time. But every once in a while, I get a chance to talk to a new injury, and I do my best to be very realistic with them and let them know that some aspects of life are going to be amazing and far better than you ever imagined and ever aspired to or ever thought you could possibly do. And some aspects of life are going to be exactly the opposite.
Are you still skiing competitively?
Well, this year I've kind of taken a year to taken a step backwards to get this Golden Cup race series off the ground, to help out and make sure that our local race team got stronger and got its feet real solid. And then as well to do some developing. I'm working on the next generation, an actual rig that will probably allow anybody to ski, the person with a knee replacement that doesn't want to take the chance of just skiing without some form of mechanical help. But past that, it's I'll still be competitive, and you'll probably have to bury me in my monoski, but I'll probably compete far too long, and you know, be one of those hang-ons that then everybody wonders, geez, you know, when's this guy going to retire? But I suppose I'll retire right after, probably the race right after I get beat by the people I'm coaching now.
You won a gold medal in the 2002 Paralympics. Any thoughts about 2006?
Well, my new email address is gold4 2006, so if that's any indication. I'd like to go back. I have a tough time running slalom. It's almost like watching paint dry, watching me ski slalom. But I'd like to go back. Last season for us was originally going to be that final season. We're going to move into the coaching full-time, move into other avenues, move into maybe equipment development. And we got to the end of it and thought, geez, you know, that was encouraging. And didn't really see an end, saw potential. So from there, we're going to, each year, we're going to play it a little bit by ear, but we're reaching for long-term goals of winning all four races at 2006 in Torino, which actually the skiing is going to be up at Sestriere, which is a great little ski area. It's really pretty up there.
Well, Chris, thank you very much for coming in today, and good luck.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much. This was really fun.
Chris Devlin-Young, Paralympic champion skier, inventor of the adaptive snowboard, coach of the New England Disabled Ski Team, and resident of Campton, New Hampshire. I spoke with Chris in December of 2002. We'll post a link to his ski team's website on the front porch section of nhpr.org. Front Porch is produced by Shay Zeller and Liz Bulkley. You can get more information about today's show and listen anytime at our website, nhpr.org. Next time on The Front Porch, Out in the Cold Week continues with Bert Yanklin, electrical engineer and specialist in cold weather radar systems. His work often takes him to the coldest places in the world. I'm John Walters. Join us on The Front Porch tomorrow at 6:30 on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, coming up to 7 o'clock and fresh air at the top of the hour. I'm Roger Parmley. At NHPR, we get support from our contributing listeners and from the environmental practice group of Rath Young and Pink Mitelli, presenting a three-part series on the successful redevelopment of contaminated properties. Details at rathlaw.com. And from Kimball Union Academy, a college preparatory school in Meriden, New Hampshire, balancing challenging academics with strong arts and athletics programs, online at kua.org. This is New Hampshire Public Radio, WEBO Concord 89.1, WEBH Hanover 91.3, WEBN Keene at 90.7, WEBC Gorham 107.1, and WEBJ Jackson 99.5. We're also heard in Nashua at 90.3, in Dover at 104.3, and in Littleton at 91.3 FM.